Hi, I'm Philip Shepherd. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing once-in-a-lifetime conference, and especially to the Meditation and Breathwork channel, which I'm proud to be sponsoring because meditation and breathwork are essential to my teachings. I'm the founder of the Embodied Present Process, or TEP, which is based on my two books and is taught worldwide. And here's one thing I believe about meditation and breathwork. You limit your experience of both if you imagine that your mind is just the thoughts in your head. Your mind permeates your every cell. Every stirring of energy within your body is an expression of it. So, if you wish to calm your mind, the most direct route is to develop the skills that enable you to feel the body's energy and ground it in the spaciousness of the present. That's what my work is about. If that appeals to you, I hope you'll check out my two presentations, one on this channel and one on the main stage. You might also be interested in a special offer exclusive to the Embodiment Conference to listen to one of my embodied meditations for yourself for free. You can find a link to the special offer in the description of this presentation or on the show notes. And now, enjoy the presentation.
Welcome, everyone. I'm so happy to see those of you and to feel your presence here this morning. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about the feminine principle in Tibetan Vajrayana Buddhism. I'm going to just give a little bit of a background, a little bit of a framework, and then we're going to have an opportunity to have a guided visualization with a divine energy in Buddhism, Tara. Many people are familiar with Tara, but this is a way, and it connects to something in Buddhism that's called deity practice. So we'll do that, and then we'll have some time for some question and answers. I think I might hold the question and answers to the end, just so that we can like move through the flow. I would like to start by generating our motivation. So often in Vajrayana Buddhist practice, we start with motivation, an intention that we're planting. Most frequently, that intention is to perhaps relieve our own suffering and relieve the suffering of all beings. But right now, if everyone could just take a moment and just connect to your heart and sort of raise this heartfelt intention and motivation that the information that's shared, that the meditation that's presented and experienced truly benefits ourselves and will be of benefit to every being everywhere without one exception. Thank you. I want to ground this experience in just a little bit of information. Many people know Buddhism. They know that the Buddha was enlightened. He really was on a quest to understand why is there suffering, and also is there a way to end it. As Buddhism evolved, we begin to see three major orientations, or sometimes they're referred to as vehicles, and you know, ways in which we really live our lives to transform and to actually practice so that suffering will be ended. The first primary vehicle or primary orientation is called Sutrayana. It used to be called Hinayana. Sutrayana is primarily comprised of what the Buddha taught. So all of the sutras, all of his teachings are contained within that. And the Sutrayana path is a path that can be described as a path of renunciation, turning away from worldly things, focusing very deeply on the Eightfold Path, focusing very deeply on meditation to actually liberate yourself from this continuous, repetitive, eon-long cycle of suffering. As Buddhism was practiced, so that's really, there's a very rich monastic tradition there. And lay people who were of wealth often supported the monasteries. They provided buildings. They were the patrons, so to speak. But for the most part, early on in Buddhism, practitioners were renunciates. They really left the world. We then, maybe somewhere around the first century, we see this expression of Buddhism shifting a little bit and moving towards more of a focus and a stress on compassion. And this is called Mahayana. Mahayana roughly translates as the great vehicle, such that people who are practicing, who were monastics, and now we begin to see more lay practitioners, were practicing and motivating their practices based on compassion. The idea that I practice not just for myself, my own liberation, I practice for the liberation of all beings. And in this particular expression or orientation of Buddhism, we meet the concept, shall you say, of the bodhisattva, the bodhisattva way. What's a bodhisattva? A bodhisattva is a being who has achieved enlightenment and yet decides that they will stay connected to this sort of relative, kind of very messy realm that we live in until every single last being, not last human, but last being, achieves enlightenment. So imagine, you know, I could get out of the craziness, but I make a commitment to stay around to help everybody else get out. True compassion, right? True connection and the manifestation of interconnectedness. So the Mahayana way focuses more on the bodhisattva and focuses, it really raised this practice of bodhicitta, awakened heart. So when we think about compassion is not just like sympathy. It is a way of walking in the world with a heart that's open, an open heart, an open mind, awakened mind. And, you know, of course, in Buddhism, the mind is the heart. The mind is not here. So walking in the world, and there is bodhicitta of aspiration, and then there also is absolute bodhicitta. But for most of us, we're in the realm of, you know, bodhicitta of wishing. I wish that suffering would end for all beings. And walking with that wish without grasping at it is a way to manifest compassion. Certainly manifesting compassion comes through loving kindness. And you think about, well, how would I embody loving kindness? Well, really, maybe I just have a kind word for people I meet. Maybe I have kind thoughts about people who I don't like. That's a hard one. But approaching the world, and really, the act of compassion is a powerful act of witnessing. Because what it says is, I cannot turn away from what is ugly. I cannot turn away from what scares me. I have to at least witness it. And then I'm in a place to take action, and to take action that's guided with compassion and wisdom. So Mahayana expression. And then out of Mahayana, and this really evolved as Buddhism moved from India more into Tibet, we see Vajrayana. The Vajra is a symbol of an immediate moment of enlightenment. So it's sometimes referred to as a lightning bolt. And so Vajrayana, the lightning bolt path, the swift path, because in Buddhism, you know, we're in this cycle of reincarnating over and over and over again. And so here with Vajrayana practice, you have the opportunity to achieve enlightenment in one lifetime. It's like, wow. Of course, it's a lot of work in that. But what Vajrayana does, so where Sutrayana turns away or renounces the world, right? And Mahayana is in a compassionate way. Vajrayana takes everything we experience on the path. Good things, bad things, ugly things, sweet things, sour things. Everything gives us an opportunity to practice. And so all aspects of life are incorporated or held, primarily because in the Vajrayana path, we are seeing everything in its enlightened expression. So that tree is not just a tree, it has an enlightened expression. That person is not just, you know, my sister. My sister has an enlightened expression, which is her true nature. So in Buddhism, a basic philosophy is primarily that the true nature of everything, of all phenomena, of all beings, is what's referred to as emptiness awareness, as luminosity, as Buddha nature. And so if everything is that, that's why you hear in Buddhism, people say, oh, this life is an illusion. Life is like a dream. And yes, it is. But also there's a relative expression that we mostly engage with, which is much more, it's a solidification, right? And so everything is emptiness. However, if I'm standing in the middle of the street and a car is coming toward me, I actually need to get out of the way because I'm not really walking fully with that recognition. I've dipped into that recognition through practice, but it's very hard to hold what's considered absolute reality. So Vajrayana takes everything on the path and has a monastic expression. But here's where we see the lay expression of Buddhism, where we see a lot of lay practitioners. So Vajrayana practitioners could be people who were living their lives, people who worked as teachers, as butchers, as in ancient times, as, you know, arrow makers. So that was not considered something that was negative. You could still meditate. You could still practice and could achieve enlightenment. Within the Vajrayana path, and at a certain point in India, we see this eruption of the divine feminine. And actually, it didn't only happen there, it happened around the world. This presence, and in some places, really what we're looking at is a re-emergence of the divine feminine. Because the first face of divinity for almost every group around the world was the feminine, manifested as the Great Mother. And so we see this coming into Buddhism, the feminine principle, which is very, very present in Tibetan Buddhism. Tantra. The word tantra means continuum, continuity. A continuity of what? A continuity of luminosity that flows through, is a composite of every single thing, all phenomena, all beings. So this idea that in actuality, We are luminous beings. We're light beings. We're not just this locked into third dimensional blood, bone, skin. And then that luminosity connects everything. So in Buddhism, there's a lot of talk about interconnectedness. Things are interconnected, interwoven. You can't discern the Karla-ness of Karla. You can't discern, you can't, you know, well, what is it? Is Karla her nose? Is Karla her eyes? Is Karla her voice? No, I'm a composite of all of these, like everything else. So this feminine principle, the feminine principle is sometimes referred to as great bliss. And that great bliss is the recognition of our true nature. Ultimate compassion. And that those particular great bliss, wisdom, and compassion exists in relationship with what's referred to as skillful means. So the feminine is the expression of wisdom in Vajrayana Buddhism. The masculine is the expression of skillful means and compassion. Compassion is skillful means. For shorthand, I like to think of skillful means. Skillful means are the tools, they're the techniques. They're the meditative practices we use to experience wisdom. And that wisdom informs how we use or work or create skillful means. So you can see that there's this interaction, because ideally, there is no male, there is no female. So these two principles enhance practitioners' experience so that they can recognize great bliss in an experiential way. They can recognize the knowledge that all things are empty of inherent nature. So the feminine principle referred to as the Great Mother. She's the universal ground of being, a primordial matrix, sometimes referred to as the womb of totality. All things pass through the Great Mother. All Buddhas are born through the Great Mother, through this matrix, through this womb of totality. So sometimes I like to think about this, and again, the words that we use are very limiting to describe something that is ultimately indescribable. But when I think about the matrix, I think about like source. You know, it's almost like, for me, the image that I often use in teaching is, you know, the ground of being, this primordial matrix. It's almost like remember those old lava lamps in the 60s? Now I'm dating myself. But you know, you'd have a lamp, you turn it on, and these little globules would rise up, and then they'd go down, and then they'd join each other, and then they'd separate. Well, if you think about, that's the true nature of everything, right? Everything is arising from this, I'll call it a space, but it's not a space. It arises, so pleasure arises, and then it may dissipate. Right? So sometimes the language is used that all phenomena, everything we see is a play of the ground of being, you know, this kind of rising and falling away of things, which are inherently empty. When we look at how this feminine principle manifests, it manifests very early on as a principle, the Prajnaparamita, the transcendent wisdom. And then Prajnaparamita manifested into a deity who was golden in color, female. She's sitting in a lotus position, on a lotus. She has four arms. One arm holds the Prajnaparamita text, another one holds a Vajra, and then she has her hands in the teaching mudra, the Dharma Chakra. And so this image became an image that people could work with, you know, in terms of this expression of this transcendent wisdom. Almost every single female deity connects through to Prajnaparamita, to the Great Mother, to this womb of totality. So some deities in Buddhism, we have Troma, who is the dark, fierce mother. We have Vajrayogini. We have the Dakinis, who are fierce feminine energies of transformation. And we have Tara. Tara, usually known as the goddess of compassion. And interestingly, Tara manifests in 21 forms. So each of these 21 expressions of Tara, in some instances, it's perhaps taking an energy and ascribing or meeting the resonances of certain specific aspects of remedy. So Tara heals, Tara helps. And so each of the 21 Taras has her sort of department, or as Lopan Chandra Easton says in her teaching, you know, her superpower. There's one who protects us from robbers on the road. There's one who deals with epidemics. There's one who deals with herbs and the far, you know, in many different areas. The Tara that I want to talk about today is Green Tara. Green Tara is probably the most familiar Tara. And she's green in color. And remember that the Taras and these beings, these deities, are luminous beings. They come from the luminous realm. And so when you think of her color as green, why green? Green is associated with the expression, well, first with the element of air. And the action, well, the action of action, absolutely. So Green Tara, and she's often seated on a lotus with her left leg folded in, and her right leg is extended outward and sort of like hangs a little bit, her foot hangs a little bit off the lotus, which is symbolic of her bodhisattva position. She is an energy that is readily available to assist all beings in whatever is causing suffering or obstacles. Her compassion is so profound, it transforms negative energies. So Tara, I'm going to tell Tara's story a little bit. Many people are familiar with this, but I really love this story. I have two short ones. So Green Tara, she was a woman eons ago. Her name was Yeshe Dawa, moon of primordial awareness, or sometimes wisdom moon. Some say she was a princess. However, she was a very adept practitioner and demonstrated profound compassion, such that people knew of her. And so at a certain point, a group of monks come to visit her because they recognize her profound practice. And they talk to her and they say, you know, really, you are such an amazing practitioner. It really is such a shame that you were born a woman. Because if you had been born a man, you could immediately attain enlightenment and then meet the needs and benefit so many more sentient beings. So she heard them and actually probably thank them for their offering. And then she said, paraphrasing, that nowhere can she find what is male, nowhere can she find what is female. That these distinctions are a product of dualistic thought. And so she decided that she will stay in the feminine form until all beings have reached enlightenment. So some say this is an introduction of the Bodhisattva principle. And that in her energy, she is, so some other names people use for her, you know, liberator, savioress. So she will go, and this is where my ideas about compassion change, because sometimes Buddhism is, you know, presented as peaceful, it's loving, it's kind, it's soft, which it is, and it is also fierce, fierce, direct, powerful. And think about making a commitment to be at the assistance of any being, no matter where they are. So that means Tara has courage. She will go anywhere to rescue beings, to pull them out of suffering. All we have to do is call on her. See, and that's the thing about, you know, wisdom beings. You have to ask them. You have to say, help me, please. You know, there's something about that that creates an openness for us to receive assistance. You know, and it can be a humbling experience, right? If you're a person who's done it on your own and made it happen, or even got the message, don't ask anybody for anything, it's hard. But that's why we are in a collective. You know, we're not doing this all by ourselves. So Tara has this courage, you know, and when you think about walking with compassion, embodying compassion, that requires determination. It requires a sense of courage, bravery, or it requires the ability to be afraid and can do the take the action anyway. Right? So we have this image. And then how powerful compassion is, in another story, she, an Avalokiteshvara, a compassionate manifestation of the Buddha, they went because there was this horrible, really evil being who was prideful about his destructive ability. Nobody could touch him. Nobody could stop him. Really, think of like the biggest, biggest, biggest ego, but causing repetitive harm. So they go and appeal for him to change his behavior. He's not going to change his behavior. Nothing can make him change his behavior. And so what they do is they flood his heart with compassion. They just flood it with compassion. And at that moment, he's immediately remorseful for all of his actions. And through that remorse, he is transformed. And he dedicates his energy to be a protector of practices and protector of practitioners. So I share this story, one, to remind us of how powerful compassion is. And two, to remind us compassion takes action, some kind of movement. And as I said, it may require that we face strong emotions, fear, anger, disgust. Not only do we want to manifest compassion for others, we want to manifest compassion for ourselves, self and other. So sometimes when Buddhism's taught, it's very other-oriented. But think, self and other, we're connected, we're interrelated. So to really allow yourself to be compassionate, what might that mean? That might mean interrupting negative thoughts when they arise. You know that negative self-talk? Some people are so harsh and so cruel to themselves. Well, compassion starts there, and an act of compassion is to interrupt that, to interrupt and counter it with something positive, because primarily it's not true. So self-compassion. And Tara can help us do this. So again, just in terms of how she looks, and there are lots of images of Tara that, you know, you can Google. She's representing the realization of emptiness in all things as she sits on that lotus. I said her left leg is bent in, her right leg extends out, which connects her to the relative world. She often has her right hand rests on her knee with the palm facing up, which is an offering mudra, an offering gesture. And she is available to help us. She has a mantra. A mantra is a sound practice. A mantra, you know, it protects our mind. It's a mind protection. Really protects our heart mind. Mantras, some have translations, some don't. They're just sound seed syllables. Her mantra, Om Tare, Tu Tare, Ture Swaha. Om Tare, Tara. Tu Tare, O Mother. Ture, come swiftly. Swaha, let it be so. So really it's like, oh, Tara, come swiftly, help me. And she works tirelessly to support us. So the meditation we're going to do, moving into that now, so you can take a moment to get into a comfortable seat, is part of what's often referred to as deity practice in Vajrayana Buddhism, where the practitioner visualizes the energy in front of them, and then sometimes actually that energy dissolves into light and merges with the practitioner, such that the practitioner then becomes the deity. Now, some people say, well, how can that happen? I can't become the deity, you know. I had some harsh language yesterday, I'm impure, drop all of that. Deity practice gives us a moment to rest in the awareness of our true being. And on an energetic level, subatomic particles are being shifted, are being changed, are being transformed. Deity practice also allows us to move beyond our limitations, beyond our limiting thoughts, our limiting ideas. I'm just a small being. How could I ever help anybody else from suffering? You can. And so we're going to do this practice, and I'm going to guide you through. So as I said, just get yourself in a comfortable position. You can do this practice eye open, but it might be helpful to either close your eyes or to have your eyes at a 45 degree angle down, just so you can really drop in. If during this thoughts arise, notice them, let them go on. And so we're just going to start by taking a couple of relaxing breaths. Begin by being aware of any tension or discomfort in your physical body. And with the next three breaths, just let that roll out. Let it drop away on the exhalation. And now just take three more breaths, maybe, but bring your awareness to any emotional tension, upset, distress. And allow that to leave, to drop away with each exhalation, just about three times. And now bring your awareness to any mental tension, some worries, thoughts, beliefs. And with each exhalation, just allow them to fall away. And now either see or imagine there is this very beautiful figure of a woman in front of you, and beautiful as you see beauty. She is a luminous emerald, far or forest green. She is smiling in a calm and pleasing way. And when you look at her eyes, our eyes are filled with kindness. She's sitting in the lotus position and her right leg is extended out towards you. She is adorned with jewels and ornaments. Her right hand rests on her right knee with a palm extending upward. And her left hand holds an opala flower. As she looks at you, you feel her warmth, you feel her compassion, you feel her loving kindness. When you look at her again, you see she's wearing silk of five colors: green, yellow, red, white, blue. In her heart, you see a syllable, Tam, T-A-M, or if you know the Tibetan letter, you can see it in that way. And from this Tam is extending this light. The light is going off into the 10 directions. And now that beautiful luminosity shines out and merges into your heart. Really allow yourself to feel the blessings from Green Tara flowing into you, entering your heart space and filling your whole body. Every single cell of your body is being washed, bathed, touched with this luminosity, this light of love and compassion. And now we're going to sound that seed syllable Tam. And as we do, Green Tara in front of us will dissolve into light. And then that green light will then enter fully into our body. And we will manifest, we become Green Tara. Really just allow yourself to feel yourself as Green Tara. And now as Green Tara, you're going to sound Tom again. and send an invitation to all the wisdom beings to come. Now the wisdom beings are coming from all the universes. We'll sound Tom one more time, and that wisdom energy will enter us, and we will be fully activated and empowered as Green Tara. And now around the Tom in our hearts is the mantra Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Swaha, which is spinning around. And we'll recite this 21 times. And as we recite it, light will now stream from our bodies, from this mantra, touching every single being everywhere with the spark of love and compassion. Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Swaha. 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 And now bring your awareness back into your body. Feel your feet, feel yourself sitting on your cushion or your seat. Bring your awareness to the noises, the sounds. When you're totally ready, open your eyes. And if any benefit was gained in this meditation, just offer it out to all beings. May all beings know, recognize their true nature. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. And now actually you get to be for the rest of the day, the evening, next morning, you get to still walk in the world with this energy of Green Tara. I want to thank you all. And I think there's a little bit of time for some questions. If there are some questions that people have, I'd be happy.
Yeah, we have a couple of questions. First of all, thank you so much, Carla. This was a beautiful experience. And I see some others are also sharing love in the chat box. So we have for now two questions coming in. But then in the meantime, to the whole audience, we have around 7 minutes that we can use. So if anybody will want to also like come off mute, we can invite you in the room. But let me start with the first question in the meantime. So let Joyce know if you want to come up here. Mary is asking, can you tell us a bit about your journey in this field of practice? Why did you pursue this?
Wow, why did I pursue this? Well, I will tell you, my best friend had read Lama Soltram's book, Women of Wisdom, which is an excellent read about women who are Buddhist practitioners. And she was going to a retreat that Lama was having for the divine feminine, the Dakini energies. And she said to me, she called me, we worked in the same place. She said, I'm going to do this. I'm doing it for my birthday. You can come if you want. It's focused on the divine feminine. And I said, oh, I'm going. I had no idea what I was going to. We went. I was introduced to a Vajrayana practice that was so profound in my life that then that started me on the path. And I, you know, studied with Lama Soltram. I've assisted teaching her. And then I experienced the Chö practice. So, you know, and I had dipped a little into Buddhism before, but this really resonated with me, this particular path. So that was my beginnings.
Thank you so much. Thanks. And I saw one hand, I think Marion, it was your hand raised and you have joined us now in the main room. Would you want to share your video and come off mute and ask your question? If everything's okay tech-wise, let's just give it another second. If not, I will just read another question from the box because more and more coming in. Okay, so until Marion is fixing technology, let's just see. So how can I find out more about this path? Let's just maybe quickly continue for like a minute. Where could people go next?
Okay, so you want to learn more about Vajrayana Tibetan Buddhism? I would say check out Tara Mandala Retreat Center, taramandala.org. Lots of retreats, a great practice, and we're doing a lot through Zoom. So there are lots of teachings coming up in next week, I think. We're starting a Wisdom Rising teaching where we focus on the Dakini energies and a particular practice with them. So please check it out. And yes, that's one place where you can find more information about Vajrayana. And it's always good to work with a teacher. Absolutely. Ultimately.
Thank you. We had a couple more people joining us here in the main room. So maybe I can just ask if one of you want to come off mute and ask your question, please do it now. I hope I see two people in cameras. Yeah. Hello, Mar.
Hi. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the meditation. That was wonderful. I have a quick question about the Chod and have you studied with Namkhai Norbu or do you follow that? Instruction? Can you want to comment why you do the Chod?
Okay.
Please.
Yes. Well, again, at that particular retreat, I heard the Chod the first time. And for me, it was like, I know this practice. And then I'm like, how could I know this practice? I'm not Tibetan. I don't know. But it really resonated. And so my first Chod was learning the Namkhai Norbu Chod from Lama Soltram. And yes, I have taken retreats and studied with Namkhai Norbu Rinpoche Why do I do Chö? I do Chö because it is a practice for this time. It is a practice of great generosity and compassion. It is a powerful healing practice, and I've witnessed the healing in my own life. And I am going to be offering a Chö teaching that practice in January. And to find out more about that, go to taramandala.org. That's where it'll be posted. But I love the Chö practice in its ability to really offer to every being what it needs. Thank you for that question.
Thank you. Are you offering anything in New York?
Yes. Most of the things are being offered on Zoom right now because we're not meeting in person, but I usually am offering things in New York.
Thank you.
Another way to get to me is nyc@taramandala.
Okay.
Thank you. At Gmail. Okay. No, sorry. nyc@taramandala.org. I have too many email addresses.
No worries. We will also put this in the chat box at the end of the session as well, so that you all can save it for yourself for the future and check it out. Thank you. Maybe one last question, maybe not the easiest, and I'm not sure if you'll be grateful for me, you know, bringing this one up, but I think it's a really good one from Stephen coming in. So how do we offer aspirants this non-dualistic idea of gender without offending self-identity? He says they agree with the Green Tara about male-female distinction, well, as non-distinction. I identify as non-binary, says Stephen. But for some, it is so important to have identity with their physical form.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow, that is a... Oh. So I am coming to... and this is evolving, this idea, you know, like there are labels that we use for things that maybe at one point were very helpful, right? And I'm not in a position to regulate other people's identity. I can only claim my own. And so in doing that, honoring how other people, whatever aspects other people claim, in identity, that I honor that. There's no debate about it. And so I think also in practicing Vajrayana Buddhism, sometimes there is a difficulty because it is pretty much locked into the dualistic male-female gender split. And many of us are rethinking that, you know, even in terms of some purification practices where men start on one side and women start on the other, and that people who identify as non-binary or gender fluid, you can choose which side to start on, and it might be different at different times. And so, you know, that's a big question, and I've offered some offerings, but I like those kinds of questions because they also put me in a position to think about things that I've taken for granted more deeply. So thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, beautiful question. Thank you so much for the answer. I see there are some more coming in. Unfortunately, this is what we had time for, but I still think we have managed to cover so many things, you know, during this session, a really beautiful experience. Thank you once again, Carla. And I will come back to you in a moment for a last question, but let me just summarize where we are and what's coming next on the Meditation and Breathwork channel. So the next session is going to be Ralph Steele, and he's going to talk about embodying emotions with somatic meditation, a really interesting area. So I hope to see a lot of you there again. And don't forget that you can stay in touch with us on Facebook. So you can join a conversation there, or at any time you can join the virtual coffee breaks via the embodiment portal to meet like-minded people. If you can, I also recommend you purchase the recording, so upgrade your profiles. You know, there's so many things going on. It's more than 1,000 hours of embodied wisdom being shared in these 10 days. So if you have the means, you can, you know, have more time to digest the content. You get access to other perks like listening lists, learning lists, and audio-only access. And you can also support us and the whole team who made this happen and made embodiment freely accessible to anyone around the world. So Carla, the last question to you then. What is your One top tip to stay embodied.
Top tip to stay embodied. Breathe. Stay in the present. Claim this vehicle that we have to use. And maybe keep doing, I want to say keep doing better, but I don't really like that, you know? Just keep connecting to love and compassion. That's really where it's at. Keep connecting to love and compassion.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you so much. And if you guys, if you want to just share one word, how you found this session, keep that love coming in the chat as well. But with that, we are closing out the session. So Carla, once again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been such a blessing. Indeed. And may Tara touch everybody's life continually. Alalaho.
Thank you. I see people do feel that love. Thank you. Take good care, everyone. Have a beautiful day. We will now close this session.